Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies, we'll reach in there, we'll pull the baby out, clip the cord, but not in a creepy way.
Oh, no. That's creepy just hearing it.
Awkward.
Welcome. This is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1997 movie Gattaca. But first we're going to do, a little housekeeping. I'm still editing. It should go out tonight, but I'm still editing the So I Married a Music Sampler episode. And I had forgotten, even talking about it. I was so happy to talk about it then. But I was happy to listen to it while I'm editing it. I was happy to find all the music that I was able to shove into there.
And shove you did.
Yeah, you'll see. It's chock full of music. Well, you'll hear. Yeah, I guess. Well, you'll see in your mind's eye.
True.
You'll see it through your ear holes. Whatever. Anyway.
See
but
through my ear holes. Okay.
Just fun stuff like Joshua Path and that goofy Greg Alexander.
I love Joshua Path. I've always loved Joshua Path. So.
Oh, yeah. No, there's nothing wrong with it. No shame, right?
No, there's no shame in it. He went a little crazy, I think. But
again, like so many artists, what can you do?
True.
But anyway. Yeah, I guess, I don't know what, maybe you get praised for being unusual. And so you allow yourself to be more unusual and weirder, and all of a sudden you are Phil Spector?
Well, I think you only get praised for being unusual if you make money at it. Otherwise, they call you stupid.
Well, make other people money.
That's a fair point.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. Yeah, no, if you make money only for yourself by doing something weird, they call you an asshole and they hate you.
Right, yeah.
But if you make money for other people, they call you a wunderkind or whatever, and support you as long as you continue to make them money, whoever they are. Any other housekeeping from your end of the land?
I can't. Not that I recall.
So tell me about the 1997 movie Gattaca. Did you see this in the theater at the time?
I did.
And tell me your reaction.
I actually was on a date.
Oh.
I had moved to Portland. I hadn't lived in Portland that long. Because I moved to Portland in 96, and this came out in 97. So it was one of those, well, let's meet at the movie theater kind of things. And, of course, as I apparently have the talent, I should never pick a movie where I'm going to meet a friend that I haven't seen in a while. Because I always pick the wrong movie. As earlier in the podcastville, people may recall that, I took my friend Debbie and we went and saw Trainspotting because we thought it'd be a hilarious movie. And it was funny to me, but very quiet after the movie. And this was similar. It was a great movie, but very quiet after. Because I had forgotten this movie is a big downer.
Yeah, a little bit. I had never seen it before. And I guess I was probably at the time, I think I was probably turned off by Ethan Hawke, Uma Thurman, and Jude Law. Each of them individually turned me off, so watching all three of them together I thought would be a nightmare.
Like the trifecta from hell.
Yeah, you know, yeah. But as it turns out, they're all good actors, and this is a good movie.
It was a good movie. I watched it, and I hadn't seen it in, it's been a long time since I'd seen it. But I forgot the twist. It was great, cause it was like I was watching the movie new again, cause I had forgotten, the supplies plot twist. So I was like, woohoo! But I also kept thinking, by the way, gorgeous, beautifully shot movie. This is a beautiful movie. This is just stunning.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about when I was watching this movie, is how beautiful the movie was and how the one thing that I know all three of us appreciate is a beautiful movie.
Yeah. And it really was a great movie. And in looking at the special features, they didn't have any money for this film. And so a lot of this was shot, they went to the San Marin municipal building where they just shot in a couple rooms, but they got sweeping vistas at the outside of the building and things like that. So there's lots of little stuff like that where, you know, the set that they used for the computer room and the set that they used for the escalators and a bottle of the sets that you see are all the same room out of the municipal building. They just repurposed it because they didn't have any money. So that was great. But I also kept thinking throughout this movie, this could easily have been Tom Cruise. And Ethan Hawke sometimes looked and sounded like Tom Cruise. Or maybe Tom Cruise sounded like Ethan Hawke at the time. I don't know. But, I kept thinking, like, I am really kind of glad, though, it was Ethan Hawke and not Tom Cruise.
Yeah. I think Ethan Hawke did a great job. But I think you're right. I think Tom Cruise could have done that role.
Yeah. And this was Jude Law's first major film.
Well, it turns out I really like Jude Law as an actor.
Yeah, he's really good.
What was that movie where he and Catherine Zeta-Jones?
Side Effects.
Yeah,
he was anyway. Dr. Jonathan Banks.
Oh, you're looking it up? Yeah, excellent.
Yeah.
I recommend watching Side Effects.
Okay. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's interesting. So yeah, the other thing about this movie, not only is it beautifully shot, but it's also very stylish. And they pull it off. I mean, the fact that they have, really, the sets are kind of minimal, you know?
Well, and they talked about that because what they didn't have a lot of money. So they were like, well, how can we make this futuristic? Because we can't really make it futuristic because we don't have the money. So they thought, what better way to make it futuristic than bring the recent past and just absolutely accentuate it? Because that's kind of what we do.
Well, not only that, but they took all the noir, you know, the 30s and 40s and 50s kind of elements to it, because the whole thing is kind of a noir story.
Absolutely. You know,
it's science fiction, but it's also a puzzle.
Right.
And a thriller.
Yeah. And a commentary.
Oh, yeah. No, it definitely has social commentary. And we'll talk later about the alternate ending or the alternate addition to the ending.
Oh, the link I sent you?
Yeah, which was interesting. Yeah. But, yeah, I think it was probably a little bit heavy-handed. But it was interesting.
I don't know. I really appreciated it. So.
Yeah. Anyway, so shall we get into the plot?
Sure.
Okay. Well, this is a movie. It's Gattaca. By the way, if you've gotten this far, you should be watching the movie, and you should probably know that Gattaca is all just based on the proteins and DNA?
Correct.
So
the building blocks of DNA itself.
Yeah. So this is all about eugenics. This is the not so distant future. And I'm reading from the Wikipedia plot summary. So in the not so distant future, eugenics in the form of conceiving improved children by genetic manipulation is common. And DNA plays the primary role in determining social class. Again, this is a commentary on social class as much as anything.
Right.
A genetic registry database uses biometrics to instantly identify and classify those so created as valids, while those conceived by traditional means and more susceptible to genetic disorders are derisively known as invalids. And genetic discrimination is forbidden by law, but in practice, genotype profiling is used to identify valids to qualify for professional employment, while invalids are relegated to menial jobs. Now, did you get the impression that genetic discrimination was against the law in this movie?
Yes.
They actually said so at some point?
Yes.
Okay.
He said it's against the law, yet they still find ways around it by they'll drug test you.
Maybe it just glossed over because it was such an important part of this movie that everybody gets tested all the time to make sure they are who they say they are also worthy.
And that was one kind of omission from the movie. It makes you wonder how often people really got tested. People at his work got tested all the time, every day when they came into work. But you don't see any other parts of society, really, because nobody checked anybody when they went into the nightclubs.
That's true. And yeah, you only really, there wasn't, you didn't see a lot outside of his work and his home. The character of Ethan Hawke is Vincent Freeman, and he is conceived naturally, without the aid of genetic selection, and immediately after birth, his genetics indicate a high probability of several disorders and an estimated lifespan of 30.2 years. So that's a little scary.
Yeah, that would be sobering.
So his parents, by the way, played by Elias Koteas and Jane Brooke, who I don't know where I saw her last at, but I thought, oh, I love Jane Brooke.
Yeah, and she doesn't ever change.
No, she's great.
But I thought he kept reminding me, I kept thinking it was Christopher Maloney.
Well, I can kind of see that. So, we have the parents who have now had one kid that has some disorders, at least disorders that he is highly probable to be getting. He doesn't necessarily have any disorders. He's just going to get them. So his parents decide to use genetic selection to give birth to their next child, Anton, who is genetically superior. Now, the two brothers have this game they play. It's a game of chicken where they swim out to sea, and the first one who gives up and returns to shore is the loser. And Vincent always loses. And Vincent dreams of becoming an astronaut, but he keeps being reminded that his genetic inferiority is going to make him not able to get that job. The closest he's going to get to a rocket ship is cleaning one, according to his dad. And his dad actually ends up being kind of a bad guy, because he wouldn't give Vincent his own name.
Right.
He gave his own name, Anton, to the second child, who is genetically superior.
Yeah.
So one day, Vincent finally plays the game of chicken with Anton, but beats him and saves Anton before he drowns. And now, aided by this knowledge that he can beat the genetically superior brother, he takes off on his own. Does this strike you, by the way, as a really dangerous game they're playing? I mean, shouldn't they both have drowned long, long ago?
Well, yeah, and it's hard to know because it's in the, it's in the not so distant future. But the water didn't look good anyway, with all the kelp and this, the seaweed and the hay. So I was just like, no. But yeah, no, it was hard to fathom. That this was a game. First of all, their parents would just ignore them for long enough, because this would have taken some time.
Oh yeah, yeah. And what if the younger brother would have drowned, and then they're just left with Ethan Hawke, who's the genetically inferior one?
Right.
That would have been a problem.
Exactly. Especially because they paid all this money.
Well, there's that. Yeah. So Vincent strikes out on his own, and as a young man, he works as an invalid, cleaning office spaces, including that of the Gattaca Aerospace Corporation, a spaceflight conglomerate. And there he meets Tony Shalhoub. And Tony Shalhoub...
I'm not sure where he meets Tony Shalhoub. I don't think he meets him at the aerospace. I think he just happens to hear about him.
Yeah, yeah. He actually wants to be an astronaut.
Yeah.
He wants desperately. And he's putting in the work.
But Tony Shalhoub was just great as the broker.
Oh, yeah. And he's known as just the German.
Yeah, that was a great role. I was so glad to see him, because it's kind of an evil role.
Oh, yeah. He's breaking the law. He's a criminal.
Yeah.
And he's not only that, but he's got a criminal organization. Because what he's doing is setting up this borrowed ladder program thing.
Yeah.
Where an invalid poses as a valid by means of trickery. So, with the promise of what percent of his future earnings?
Well, I think it was originally 20%, and then it was 25%, and then it was 30%.
Yeah, so it's a lot. He's paying a lot of his forever future earnings to make this transformation. And by the way, the transformation, it includes things like contact lenses, which are understandable and not all that drastic, to also breaking his legs and making him taller.
Right.
Which is more drastic.
And painful.
and very painful.
And trivia note, in the trivia notes for this.
Yes.
Jude Law and Ethan Hawke are exactly 5'11".
Oh, that's funny. So there was no need to breaking your legs.
Right. I mean, it's good for the story. It was good drama.
Well, and part of the way it works is because Jerome Eugene Morrow, Jude Law, is the one that Vincent is going to be pretending to be. And the reason that he's using Jerome is because Jerome, he is a paraplegic. He was paralyzed after a car accident. And he's got the second to none genetic makeup. So now armed with a lot of, I mean, the first note I wrote about this movie was, and this is just in the opening title sequence, which is actually kind of artfully, beautifully done. But as soon as I saw the one thing, I'm like, fingernail clippings? Yick. Because what happens is in this world is that, you know, in order to pose as somebody else genetically, you have to not leave any trace of your actual genes around. So you can't leave dead skin or hair, or, you know, you have to have, at any point where you're tested, your blood tested, you have to have that, or urine test, that kind of thing. You have to have all of the good genetic material with you at all times, in case anybody gets nosy. Which,
right, and this is kind of an invasive society now.
At least Gattaca Corporation is.
Right, I mean, because, you know, you have to give a blood sample to get through the front door.
And he's doing things like vacuuming his computer keyboard and then taking Jerome's actual, like, dead skin and hair and eyelashes and stuff and sprinkling them into the keyboard. Yeah. So if anybody checks, they're the right DNA.
Which totally grossed me out, by the way.
Yeah, it's still. And he has to take these, like, long showers in the morning to scrub all of the stuff, like, dead skin.
Can we talk about the showers, though?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Yes. I don't care what I was trying to hide. I would not sit inside an incinerator.
Yeah. At the end of the shower, you get out, and then he flips a button, and it sets fire to everything inside so that you get rid of all the genetic material.
Yeah, no. No, no, I don't have that kind of luck. I'm not sitting inside a barbecue.
Well, it seems fraught with problems. Like, you'd think, like, there'd be a very limited warranty period on the shower.
Yeah, it made me uncomfortable after the first time I saw it, because I think the movie opens with him in it.
Yes. Yeah, because at first he's, like, scrubbing himself down, and I kind of also weirded me out that he's, like, scrubbing on his skin. And then he immediately takes the same brush and scrubs into his hair. Like, I don't know.
It set off my OCD germs, so.
Yeah, well. Yeah, I mean, I don't have that level of the germ thing, but yeah, if I was like icked out a little bit by the fingernail clippings being a prominent part of the title sequence, like having all of that, like, genetic material, dead skin, you know, sloughed off skin cells and hair and stuff, yeah, a little gross. Although it has a good opportunity to clean out an electric razor and use the shavings from an electric razor, which are, it's a bizarre thing anyway. I don't know if you've had an electric razor before. Wait, you do.
I do.
You totally have an electric razor. Yeah, you have a serious one. You have one that actually turns into an incinerator, I think.
I have a Braun. So I have three because, you know, I don't shave. I have the beard and mustache these days. So I trim. But when I was in the full-on shaving, I had the just kind of the goatee, soul patch kind of thing. I shaved my cheeks, as it were. That Braun thing, which uses ethanol, basically, to clean itself, which is just a big incinerator waiting to happen, you're right. But it superheats the ethanol and then runs it over the motor while it runs for 15 minutes to clean. So that thing is, it heats up. So, I love that. I still have it. I still use it. I love it. But then I've got one that's like a vacuum, a combo vacuum trimmer, so that you don't get hair everywhere when you trim your beard.
Does it make the vacuum sound?
It does. It has a vacuum in it. So you turn it on, and it's not loud. It's battery operated. So, and it was a Christmas present a couple years ago from my lovely sister-in-law, Jennifer.
Oh,
unfortunately, it doesn't work as well as
I was going to say, if it works, then you should actually send me the link to it.
Yeah, it works-ish, but I still, end up with hair everywhere when I trim. So I'm like, it really didn't end up saving me anything. I still use it. It's a great razor, a great shaver. But as far as the vacuum part of it, you're better off just putting down a towel or something.
Yeah, or doing it in the shower.
Yeah, but that was beard talk, so that's good.
Next on beard talk.
Exactly.
Plucking versus what, tweezing? Tweezing and plucking are the same thing. Next on beard, how about nose hair removal? What's your preferred method of nose hair removal?
I just pluck.
Oh, plucking is the worst.
I just yank.
I mean, I guess if I needed a good cry, I'd pluck, but ugh.
No, I just yank. I make a concerted effort. I just get some tweezers, and I do it when I'm watching TV, so I can't really pay attention, and I'm watching TV and yank. Yank and yank, and you know, distraction is misdirection, I guess it is, you know, the best distraction.
Yeah. Note to self: don't share the popcorn bowl when Jason's watching TV.
I don't do it when I have company. That'd be like trimming your toenails or something.
Have you ever worked at a place where somebody trimmed their toenails at their desk at work?
Yes.
Yeah, it's foul.
try working at a public clinic where people do it in the lobby in front of you.
Well, there's that. I mean, you know, come on. You're going to be there for a long time. You're going to make me wait. I'm going to do my personal hygiene in front of you.
Yeah, but no, the guy in the cube next to me when I worked in the offices of the lovely Fred Meyer Incorporated, you know, Freddy Krueger, used to do that, and that used to drive me crazy because they would flit over the cubicle wall sometimes. And land on my desk.
Well, that's true because you have to use a certain amount of force to clip a toenail. So that's, yeah. I mean, they ricochet.
Well, and he'd be sitting in his chair and he'd put his feet up and on his desk and
I've never had a cubicle. I've always worked at a place where we shared a desk. You know, we still rotate around.
See, at one point we had adjoining, we didn't really have cubicles at one point as much as I had a desk surface that was connected to his desk surface because we were part of a team for a while, and he thought it was hilarious to turn his fan on and fart into it at me.
There's been a certain amount of fart pong with fans in our office too.
Yeah, and I was like,
mostly before I started working there, but during the big craze of the gastric bypass surgery everybody was getting, so there were a lot of extra flatulence in the environment.
Wow.
Anyway, that's one of the side effects of some of the gastric bypass surgery is you have a lot of, flatus?
Yes.
Yeah, anyway.
Flatulent. Excess flatulent.
Yes.
So,
anyway,
back to the movie.
Next on Fort Talk.
Yes, scrubbing. So, yes. You know, Scrubbyville. And so Vincent, you know, basically through all these hard sacrifices ends up becoming Jerome, which is an interesting transformation.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was well done. I mean, they're not all that different looking, you know, at a cursory glance. Once you do the hair and the facial hair and stuff, it's all fine. But, and the fact that he gives a lot of steely eyed Tom Cruise type looks in this movie.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's why I kept looking going, that totally was a Tom Cruise. I can even, at one point I was like, that was a Lestat from, you know, Interview with a Vampire stare.
Well, I hear, at least stories of people who have worked with Tom Cruise who say, by the way, that he's a fantastic person to work with. You know, you've heard all these weird stories, but apparently when you have his attention, you have all of his attention.
See, that creeps me. Just you saying that gave me chills.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it seems like in real life, he part of his character or his training through Scientology or whatever you want to call it, is he will focus his attention. And so he has that stare, that steely eyed, you know, collateral Lestat kind of full on, I am in control of the situation and I am going to be gregarious and I am going to be fun to be around, but I am working at it. Yeah, I'm taking this seriously.
Yeah, he seems too intense to me to want, I would not want all of his attention. It would make me uncomfortable because of his intensity. I would be, ugh, creepy. And I like him. I like Tom Cruise. I mean, I don't, as an actor, as a person, I have no opinion because I don't know him. So,
well, yeah, me either. It's, yeah, he's fine. Right. He's a good actor. So that's all I care about, really.
Yeah.
And if he's a little wacko and he's not, you know, he's not, I don't believe in his religion, but, you know, turns out that's pretty common for me, so it's fine.
No, I almost said something really snarky just now, but it's going to make a, you know, at least he hasn't killed himself joke, but.
Well, but you know what? If he did, wouldn't you be like, oh, he must have been troubled for a long time. You know, that in somebody who burns with that high intensity flame can't live out forever.
No, I would probably say, take that, Dianetics.
He is now living with Xenu.
Yeah. So anyway, he becomes Jerome.
And he's going to go to Saturn.
Yeah, no. And then, you know, we get to see the office, you know, with the, it was a beautiful office, the cubicles. I loved the cubicles.
The little mini cubes?
The little workstations.
Yeah.
The little rounded. I loved those. I told Derek, I want one of those. Those are awesome. Not practical. Cause,
no,
you know,
not at all.
But, oh, they were just beautiful. You know, an office full of that. That's just like, that's like Herman Miller's dream right there. But
who's Herman Miller?
He does all the furniture, the office furniture, Herman Miller office furniture.
Oh, see, I don't know.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm sure it's lovely. I'm sorry. We'll just cut this part out of it. It's Herman Miller's dream. Yes, yes, it is. I don't get out much, you know? It's just,
it's okay.
I get the office furniture they provide for everyone.
I'll send you a link. It's okay. There's no shame in it.
Yeah, there you go. So could I get a Herman Miller, like, podcast studio desk?
Yeah, no, you can get all kinds of Herman Miller furniture. Seriously, if you look it up online, there you will find not less than billions of stuff.
Huh, interesting. Well, do you know you can actually get a podcast booth, like a sound booth, where literally
you wouldn't hear barking dogs and screaming children?
No, you wouldn't. But also, it seems like it would be a million degrees because it looks like maybe part of a Connex, and you lock yourself in like a refrigerator, like you're doing those hearing tests in the soundproof booth, but it's very small.
Can I just say, I love those hearing tests because it's the only time where I don't have ringing in my ears.
Okay, so wait.
Now I'm looking at Herman Miller chairs, and there's just pages and pages and pages and pages. Anyway.
Herman Miller desk situation. Yes, he is a very intense man, and he is. You get the idea that he is definitely head of his department. He's the smartest guy in the room. If not the smartest, then one of the smartest guys in the room. And he's going to go to
amazing.
He's going to go to Saturn.
Valid.
Well, exactly. And he's going to go to Saturn by will alone. Although, you know, again, a lot of him even being there is just based on the fact that he's got the right genetics.
Or he's borrowing the right genetics. A borrowed ladder is the term. Because he's been a victim of genoism.
Yeah, what do they call, what is he?
Degenerate.
Oh, yes, a degenerate. That was the only false note in the whole entire movie. I thought I was going to find lots of them. It was just that one, and they only said it once, so it was fine.
No, they said it a couple times.
Oh, did they? Yeah, well.
Yeah. It was a term that they used a couple times, because the genoism thing, too. I was like, because I'm a fat guy. I'm like, pizza? With a G. I got it.
It's not Totinoism.
Right. Exactly. I was like, oh, you know.
It's not DiGiorno-ism.
Right. I was like, oh, God, I can't believe I just, oh. It's not delivery, it's my stupidity.
Anyway. Yeah, sadly, I wouldn't get through the door of Gattaca. Anyway, literally through the door, probably. Wouldn't even get to the point of testing my blood, because it'd be you have to be this thin to ride this
term. Road. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's fine.
The other term that they had in this movie, was godchild.
Yes.
Because Vincent is a godchild.
It seems weird, though, because it seems in this society, in this future, there wouldn't be a lot of place for actual religion.
And there didn't appear to be any religion.
So was Godchild something of snarky?
I think it was a slur. It was a derision.
Yeah, so you might as well believe in faith because you don't have the genetics to back it up for real.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know.
So, because she said, "You're a godchild." You know, she said that, and it was just like, it wasn't an accusation. It was like, it was a derision. It was a.
Well, okay. So now we have, again, this is a kind of a fun noir type tale because we've got, Vincent who is pretending to be Jerome so he can go into space and fulfill his lifelong dream. But then we have this murder, a murder that we know from the very beginning that Vincent did not commit. But because they're...
Well, but do you really know that? I don't think you ever... I mean, spoiler alert, with Gore Vidal did it, but you really don't know that Vincent didn't do it.
Well, I was pretty convinced that Vincent was all scooped up, you know, like his plan would have worked except for this murder, which really screwed him because now there's a lot of scrutiny.
Right. You don't want to think that Vincent was capable of that, but I don't think the movie was ever really clear because the motive that they gave the flight director for doing it really just didn't seem that solid.
But did the higher up guy find out about Vincent? Was there some?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, so there wasn't really any motive for Vincent either.
Right. No, I know. I'm just saying. But it was one of those where there was enough doubt in me that I was like, he could have done it. Now I don't think he did, but he could have.
Well, listeners, countrymen. Actually, international listeners as well. Opine. Send us your thoughts. Could Vincent could have done it? Is it possible?
Let's take a listener poll.
Yeah. Did Vincent do it? Anyway, okay, so basically we have this murder, and because there's heightened investigation now, and they're doing the crime scene with all of these, again, like G-men, that they call Hoovers, which is sort of funny for two reasons. One, you know, J. Edgar Hoover, but also because they have these little vacuums sucking up stuff from the crime scene. A lot of vacuums in this movie.
Yeah.
And, of course, a single eyelash he has left at roughly the scene of the crime.
Inadvertently.
Inadvertently. Oh, of course, yes. It never would have been detected otherwise, or at least it never would have been tested. And so now... the police automatically think that it is the invalid that must have done this crime because, of course, that's your first suspect.
Invalid.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Jude Law is the invalid.
Yes.
And Ethan Hawke is the invalid. Anyway.
Yes, Jude Law is the valid invalid.
Yes. Anyway, so the invalid is, of course, the prime suspect, and now it's the race to find the invalid.
Right.
So now Ethan Hawke has to play this cat and mouse game, trying not to get caught by the police. In the meantime, you get to know the Jude Law character better, and you find out that Jude Law, not only is he physically paralyzed, but he is mentally broken as well.
Right. He's had issues since before the car accident.
Yeah, he is a swimming star that went to whatever level of games or Olympics or whatever. And he shows Vincent his medal. And his medal is silver. And he cannot abide that. He was not destined to be one step down on the podium.
And so because of that failure, he goes from swimming in a pool to swimming in a bottle.
Yes, and he also stepped in front of the car that hit him on purpose.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So he is in this chair of his own doing.
Yes.
Despite his genetics.
His own engineering, if you will.
Yeah, he has a flaw. And, well, more than one. But his genetics couldn't save him from this flaw. He could never live up to his own genome. So the Jude Law character has issues too, but has a beautiful apartment.
Oh, yeah, no, I absolutely.
And what about the staircase? How fun is that?
I love the staircase. Did you get the staircase?
Oh, totally, from the very beginning.
I didn't. 2 points in this movie where they have staircases like that, by the way.
Oh, really? Okay. I know it's in the apartment. Is there another staircase?
Yes. In the genetic center, when the Blair Underwood character, where the parents are sitting, the staircase right behind them is a helix.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Yeah, so this is a helix staircase. So you, there are no points in this movie where you can't think about genetics and DNA.
But see, it wasn't a million pairs of scissors.
It's true. Yeah, it was a little bit more subtle than a million pairs of scissors, that's for sure.
Yes, I'm a little bitter. But, no, I mean, I didn't.
So back to Stanley Kubrick. Anyway.
Oh, wait, you don't, you.
No, no, you'll get there.
We will get to it.
Okay, all right. So, so now we have this cat and mouse game. And we want to know, from the beginning, I didn't think Vincent did it. So I was curious who did it anyway, because you know you have met the person that did it.
Right.
It was fun that spoiler, Gore Vidal did it. Like, has Gore Vidal been in many other movies?
No, and they said he hadn't really acted up to this point, and it was great fun for him, but also a lot of stress for everybody because he wasn't quite sure what to do, so they just kind of let him do what he did.
Yeah, well, I think probably like Truman Capote. I mean, Gore Vidal really was a Truman Capote type character.
Yeah, larger than life.
Yeah, and so, you know, he probably was able to just do his Gore Vidal thing, and it was fine.
Yeah, he really played himself. I mean, murder notwithstanding, but he really kind of played himself.
So now we have, again, cat and mouse game. Also, Vincent becomes close to a coworker, Irene Cassini. Now, what is Irene's issue? Why is Irene so invested in the genetic code, the genome of one Mr. Vincent?
Because she's convinced she's going to die young.
Well, she is, yes. But why is she...
She's interested in finding out how valid the valids are. Because she worries if the valids are truly valid, then she's going to die. But if the valids aren't quite as valid as their DNA would suggest, then there's hope that she might not, you know, she might not die early.
Well, and not all valids are created equal, as we find out, because she also has a higher risk of heart failure. So she...
Well, and Gore Vidal, the flight director, says that, in our recruitment, we had to kind of drop our standards some.
Yeah,
he says that at one point where they talk about where, you know, they prefer the highest they can get, but, you know, with recruitment being what it was, they had to settle a little bit.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, Gore Vidal is a valid, but he's a fat guy too, so, you know, it's not perfect.
Yeah.
Apparently, you can walk in front of a bus or not be able to walk in front of a Cheesecake Factory and overcome your genetics. We have, again, all these connections. A slight tangent here. I realized, of course, 30 episodes in, that I didn't do a very good job of keeping track of the details where we could. We live in computer times, and this has a blog, and this, you know, we have the ability to link all of these movies, especially using IMDb. So I have gone through and using a little program on my iPhone, I'm going through and adding all of the casts and writers and directors and producers of all these movies that we've done.
Yeah.
Because there are lots of connections, like Alan Arkin.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, he's great, and he's in this movie. So Alan Arkin plays Detective Hugo, and there's also a detective, Anton Freeman. We didn't know he was Anton Freeman until the end of the movie, right?
I don't think they ever say his name.
Yeah, I don't think so either, because, spoiler, you find out that one of the detectives working on the homicide case is Vincent's brother.
Yeah, and that was the twist that I had forgotten. I mean, I completely forgot, and I was happy that I did, because when it happened, I was like, oh, of course, I'd forgotten. I was so happy. I was just so thrilled. But, yeah, no, I think they deliberately didn't say his name. But Alan Arkin, what a great, he played such a great role.
Oh, yeah. Well, talk about connections. Let's just talk about the cast a little bit. We have Xander Berkeley, who is Dr. Lamar, who is one of the people giving the tests all the time for the Gattaca Corporation.
I love him, and I have something to say about him when you're done.
Oh, no, he's great, and he happens to have been in an X-Files episode that I had just seen, so I was delighted to see him anyway.
He was also in Air Force One, which I just watched last night on TV, because it was on, and I could not watch it.
Of course. Absolutely. No, he's great. We also have, of course, Jane Brooke, like I said, the lovable Miss Jane Brooke. Maya Rudolph was the delivery nurse. Blair Underwood was a geneticist. Ernest Borgnine was Caesar, the head of the cleaning crew.
Yeah.
Tony Shalhoub was German, or the German, I can't remember which. Dean Norris from The Frozen Ground was one of the cops. And then Ken Marino was a sequencing technician. And I know Ken Marino because he comes up on podcasts quite a bit.
Ernest Borgnine, by the way, there, because I was watching the special features, there are two deleted scenes. There was more than two deleted scenes, but there were two deleted Ernest Borgnine scenes. And one of them was a little bit critical. And so when they took it out, I was like, well, this makes a little more sense now. So there's a point where Vincent, as Jerome, is sitting in like a locker room area of the facility of Gattaca, and he's sitting on a bench drinking or doing whatever he's doing. And Ernest Borgnine comes down, and they have a chat, and they're kind of talking playfully back and forth. And it's obvious at that point that Caesar knows that Jerome is Vincent. He knows what's gone on. He knows what's happened. And he's happy to help Vincent. And so Vincent says, I've left some trash in your locker. And he says, it's okay, Vincent. I will take care of it. I'll deal with it. So that indicates to me that Caesar had been helping him at Gattaca keep all of his stuff out of the hands of anybody that might figure that he's an imposter, a degenerate or whatever. And there was so Vincent goes back to wherever he's going, and Ernest Borgnine opens up the locker, and instead of being trash in the locker, there was a giant telescope, which is, I thought, kind of touching.
Aww.
But also, there's a point later in the movie which you do see where, you know, where Caesar's got the bag of trash and the detective takes it. You know, he's like, this is evidence. He's like, it's just trash. That, the scene where Vincent and Caesar talk about, I left some trash in the locker, would have explained why Caesar would have been so upset that the guy was taking the trash, because ostensibly the trash that he was taking was the trash he was trying to get rid of for Vincent.
Yeah, and I think there's one scene where he actually picks up a cup, like, right away on purpose.
Yes.
So that kind of tips the hand that he knows what's going on, too.
Yeah, as they're on the stairs, I think he gave him the water cup or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, it's funny because Uma Thurman suspects, but she runs his DNA through her own sequencing, a private firm or whatever.
A service.
Yes. And finds out, unfortunately, that he's even better than she thinks he was.
Right. Well, because she's not running his DNA, she's running Jerome.
Well, exactly.
Which Vincent left on the comb strategically, correctly, assuming somebody might come and get it. And, you know,
that worked out. That's why I was trying to figure out, was she trying to determine who the murderer was, or she's just trying to suss out some guy she wants to date?
Well, I think she wanted to know. You know, she wanted to see, because I think there was some attraction and some interest, but also some curiosity. And so that's why I think she did it.
And these, of course, this corporation, this office setting, is very cold as far as, you know, there's not a lot of casual Fridays going on.
Well, no, and you notice they all wear dark suits and they're all wearing dark clothes, and it's a dark environment. And, you know, they don't interact much. They're all sitting at their desks all day long. And it was very much like I equate it to typing class, because everybody's there at their desk typing, 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 and the instructor's walking up and down the aisle. You know, flight director, is that the flight path we discussed, Vincent or Jerome? Yes, director, it is. You know, that kind of you know, professorial antagonism, if you will.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I loved the fact, well, at the very end, when they get into the space capsule, no, everybody's still wearing a suit and suit and tie. I mean, this is still like a noir kind of thing. And I love the fact that instead of, you know, the cars are powered by some sort of electricity or alternate energy, not gas.
Yeah.
But they're all like 40s and 50s cars.
Right. Well, and the her car was a Citroen, and there's only 1,100 of them in the world.
All the cars are beautiful.
Yeah, no, they're it's a great, just everything about this film was so well visually done and stunning. I mean, it was classic because it's, of course, retro, but I liked it. But, oh, here's your 2001 reference, you bastard. So when the studio was looking at this movie and they were looking at the ending and they were like, he's in a suit and he's getting on a spacecraft. He can't be in a suit getting on a space, an astronaut. He needs a helmet. He needs a thing. And no movie would ever put a guy in a suit and put him in a damn spacecraft.
Oh, that's funny.
So they sent the studio directors a copy of 2001 and they didn't hear a word back.
Oh, that's funny stuff.
So there's your 2001 reference.
Yeah. Very nice. Well, and he's also going to Saturn, too, which is the destination in the 2001 novel, at least.
I'm sorry, I have to cross Degenerate off of my list and cross off his brother off my list.
Okay, well,
totally forgot the twist. I'm crossing it off my list. Ernest Borgnine, crossing off my list.
Well, one of the things that is in the Wikipedia plot summary that I didn't get so much is that, of course, now during this investigation, we find out that, they get really close to finding who the invalid is. In fact, in the nightclub scene, they pretty much do find out, you know,
right,
trying to find him. There's a nice little chase scene. But that's when we find out there's a confrontation, because even though now they have caught the killer, Gore Vidal, so we think that Vincent is off the hook, but they still want to know who the invalid is now. And it seems like the person who is responsible for that part of the investigation, it turns out, is his brother, Anton.
Right.
So they decide to settle this in the only honorable way they know, having their swimming chicken game. And it says I'll just read what the plot summary is as far as the last game of chicken. The two swim out in the dead of night, in bad water, weather, by the way. And Anton is surprised by Vincent's stamina, which during the scene where it pretty much plays out as the last time they played chicken, where Anton loses and Vincent saves him. Well, then it's the stunning revelation that Vincent gives Anton that the reason he won was he's never saving enough the energy to swim back. But that doesn't make sense, because then he swims back. Sort of.
Well, except that he didn't really swim back as much as they drifted back.
Yeah, well, and it says in the Wikipedia thing that Vincent rescues Anton and swims them both back to shore safely using celestial navigation. Was that obvious to you?
Not obvious, but I mean, if I hear that, I can see, because he looks at the stars and he does, you know, he does swim back with the stars.
I guess. Well, yeah, I guess there's a thing where we can't see the shore.
Right.
And it doesn't matter because he knows. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, I got it now.
Yeah, but if you hadn't told me that, I would have never connected those dots.
Yeah, well, again, yeah, when I read it, I'm like, well, really? Really? So now it seems like all the loose ends are tied up.
But see, I also couldn't tell, and we were discussing this, I'm like, did Anton survive or did he die?
Oh, I hope Anton survived.
But you don't know. I mean, because you never really get an impression or not.
Well, it's because Vincent has that Tom Cruise face. You just never know whether he's capable of killing his own brother to go to Saturn and fulfill his dream.
But he's doing Magnum or Blue Steel or whatever.
Exactly, all the time.
So Vincent gets to go. He gets to go to Saturn.
Well, he thinks he's all in the clear. Except because of all the hubbub recently, they have one final test, and he's got to pee. and he did not bring any of the Jude Law's urine with him.
Because he didn't suspect he'd be tested on the last day, because they never do that.
And why would he need it in the spacecraft? By that time, he'll be out of the jurisdiction of the people that matter.
Right.
But no, luckily, though, he gets Dr. Lamar. Well, I guess maybe Dr. Lamar's the head doctor or something, the genetic doctor, the testing doctor in Gattaca.
Yeah.
And turns out Dr. Lamar, who has been Chatty Cathy during all of his tests.
Yeah. And stares at his penis all the time.
Yeah, and admires his penis openly.
Yes.
Yes.
Uncomfortably.
Congratulates him on his genetic marvels in the penis area.
Yes.
And also keeps wanting to talk to him about his son.
Yes. Creepy.
Yeah. So,
but not in a creepy way.
Well, no. And of course, you like Xander Berkeley enough, so you're like, huh, well, he couldn't have any. I mean, unless he's like some sort of proud dad trying to get his son a date with a handsome spaceman. I don't know.
Yeah, but those Earth-Saturn romances never last.
No, but they seem so good at the time, you know. Anyway, so he's got to pee with his gigantic schlong. And it was funny, because I was thinking maybe he was using a prosthetic penis. Did that ever cross your mind?
That's what I figured.
Yeah, because it's like, wow, that's impressive. It's like, well, that could understand then, you know, why you would think. Because otherwise, he's just got to have this, like, cleverly hidden tube from the year.
He makes the point, he says, you know, Vincent's never pee shy, or Jerome's never pee shy. So I just assumed it was a prosthetic.
Yeah, me too. But, well, and it still, as it turns out, could have been, because it wasn't the genuineness of his penis.
Oh, very funny.
Rather, it was the handedness of his delivery.
Right, which is hilarious.
Yeah, which is funny, because, of course, he flunks his pee test and comes up as an invalid, and...
Invalid, sorry.
He comes up
nuclear.
He comes up as a nuclear invalid. And Dr. Lamar is like, oh, we'll fix it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Like I've been playing this game for a long time. You know, I like you. I comment on your penis. Yeah, and that's where he delivers the fantastic line that, you know, right-handers don't use the left hand to pee with. Which never occurred to me. But it's true, at least in my case.
Well, no, yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, now with the Bluetooth, you know, you got the hands-free navigation, but still.
Oh, pity your bathroom floor.
Yeah, well. turns out if you get fat enough, it's just a prayer anyway that you're aiming in the right direction. It's all a series of wires and pulleys. Anyway, we're going to clip this out of here.
Yeah, please.
Okay.
Oh, my God. So let's go back a little bit in the movie. So now Vincent finally gets, you know, past Alan, you know, Alan Arkin and Anton, you know, Hugo and Anton talk and, they kind of have a come to Jesus moment where, you know, basically it all just works out that Hugo's understanding and he gets it and, I get the impression that there's going to be a quid pro quo that Hugo is going to get a promotion finally.
Because he solved the crime?
Because he's not going to squeal that Anton didn't turn his brother in.
So does Anton have power over Hugo's promotion? Is that what we're saying?
Well, he's senior to Hugo.
Oh, is he? I didn't know that. Okay, so Anton's actually the chief detective or whatever.
Yeah, because because Hugo keeps deferring to him.
Okay, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Through the whole movie, he defers to Anton. And so I got the impression at the end of the movie that this was kind of Hugo's way to get a promotion. He's like, you know. So that was my impression.
Yeah, no, that could be, absolutely. Yeah, that makes sense.
But to go back, So Vincent and Irene hump it out in her little glass palace thing, which the added feature say it was really difficult for us because we had to find a place that had a nice sweeping vista like that right over the water, and we found a place except that we couldn't park there when the tide came in because the tide came in over where we would park, so we were trying to shoot the scenes, but we had to hire a whole bunch of like private security people because the surfers would come by and throw rocks at the windows.
That's funny.
But they hump it out, right? And then he takes that horrible shame wash on the beach.
Well,
where he's scraping himself with a shell.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, and he's got to have that moment.
I was like,
nothing comes without a price.
Yeah, but it was just so uncomfortable.
Get it? Comes.
I'm like, and you've already left your DNA, dude. What do you? What,
well, that's true. Yeah, he may have had a godchild. We don't know.
That's true.
So he goes to he gets into his capsule, but as it turns out, Jude Law. Oh, we skipped an actually very important, very dramatic scene where Jude Law.
Yeah.
Jude Law does a hell of a job climbing up the stairs as a paralyzed guy.
That's true.
Wasn't that a fantastic scene?
And you believed it. He sold it.
Totally, he sold it. Yeah, I thought that was very good.
No, I thought so too. I thought, wow, because you know, seeing because I don't know what they did, but it was really a great scene. Plus, the stairs anyway are great to watch. So, but you know, to see him to have to try and climb up was just. It was actually kind of wrenching, but that's not the worst. That's not the worst of the Jude Law scenes.
Oh no! We're getting to the final Jude Law scene because as Vincent is getting into his capsule and living his dream, Jude Law has figured out that he's just he's gonna pull a nanu nanu, and no, too soon.
Well, I will laugh, but I don't know.
Anyway, okay. Yeah, so Jude Law climbs into his own capsule, carrying his swimming silver medal.
Yeah.
And basically takes a shower in the incinerator shower.
In the self-cleaning oven that is the incinerator.
Yeah. And so he has left Vincent with a lock of his hair and enough of his genetic material to last for many, many, many years once he comes back.
Yeah, he's been stockpiling stuff.
And so when Vincent opens the letter to only find a Jerome's hair locket, or a lock of his hair in it, rather.
Yeah.
He ends on the line that they say every atom in our bodies was once part of a star. Maybe I'm not leaving, maybe I'm going home. Roll credits.
Yeah.
So then there's the deleted scene.
Downer, by the way. Downer.
Yeah, it's a downer movie. Yeah, it's a downer ending.
Yeah.
Well, I've got thoughts, though, beyond the ending of the movie. But first of all, the deleted scene is actually pretty cool. We should probably put a link to it on the blog because it actually spells out what this movie is about. And actually, the poster for this movie spells what it's about. It's like it shows a picture of Ethan Hawke and it says The Prisoner. And then it shows a picture of a human cell, and it says, his cell. So, yeah, prisoner funny. Of a cell. Yeah, that was very good. I misspoke. The cars were based on 60s models cars, not like 30s and 40s.
Right.
But still. And the futuristic buildings were the modern architecture of the 50s.
Well, yeah, which was, you know, Frank Lloyd Wright, though, which was 100 years before its time.
Well, yeah. A couple things in the trivia sort of area. This is a movie where Uma Thurman and Ethan Hawke became a couple and they eventually married. And I didn't think Uma Thurman's role was all that. I mean, I guess it was necessary, but it wasn't like a big role, really. She didn't have a lot of.
It created tension.
Yeah, but she didn't have a lot of room to move as an actor, I don't think.
No.
So. I found that a little bit disappointing.
She didn't have a lot of part to her part.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, her character was necessary, and she did a fine job, but it wasn't a role that she was allowed to shine in, I don't think.
I think the part wasn't meaty enough.
And that's fine. I mean, there are no small actors, only small roles. So perhaps this.
Well, but I mean, but you're right. I don't think she had a lot of leeway to be able to move. But this movie was also. I mean, this movie had a very. I don't want to say rigid storyline, but the storyline was pretty solid. So.
Oh yeah, no, I don't have any problem with how it was done. And like I said, I didn't have a problem with her as an actor. I just thought it was the part itself. To be on the poster, I would have thought she would have a meatier part. That's the only thing.
Yeah. Really, this was a Jude Law and Ethan Hawke movie.
Most definitely. Well, this is a movie that Senator Rand Paul got in trouble for cribbing the Wikipedia entry during a speech at Liberty University in 2013.
Oh, dear.
He was supporting Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli's campaign for governor of Virginia.
Oh, Cuccinelli.
And Rand Paul accused pro-choice politicians of advocating eugenics in a manner similar to the events of Gattaca. So if you don't vote for Ken Cuccinelli, you're going to end up with Gore Vidal. I don't know. I don't know what the point of that is, but but here's the other thing. So we feel great because Vincent made it to his spacecraft, but isn't he jeopardizing his mission by possibly dying in the on the way to the? I mean, I guess there's no physical reason. Well, I guess we won't know because he's been using all this fake stuff. And actually, it shows him being a lot more stressed at his treadmill exercises,
right?
Than he's putting on. So he's actually kind of endangering this mission, don't you think?
Yeah, but I don't think he cares because if he dies there, he doesn't. He's like, I'm dying doing what I want to do and doing what I love.
Yeah, but isn't his job on the spacecraft important enough that maybe he shouldn't risk the rest of his crew members by dying?
He doesn't care about anybody but getting to Saturn. He's willing to use, he's willing to use Jerome.
Yeah, and that's our hero in the story?
I don't think he's a hero.
I guess not. No, I don't think he's very heroic at all.
No.
I mean, living a lie is sort of one thing if you're still proving that you can do it on your own. You know, you don't need the help of genetics to do it on your own. That's all admirable.
I think the only hero in this movie was Irene, where she overcomes the genoism. And, she admits that she loves him.
Yeah, I suppose. Well, I guess Alan Arkin is going to get a promotion out of it, so that's good.
Yeah, but he did that. Yeah, but he did through blackmail and
Well, or he's going along to get along, which isn't all that admirable.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. But all in all.
Again, I don't care, but.
No. I was happy to see this movie. I was pleased by it. I was a little worried that it was going to be a little slow. But it wasn't. It moved along just fine.
No, and I was surprised, with the exception of the fact that there's no cell phones in the whole thing at all. I mean, I understand that they really tried to make it minimalist in terms of technology, because you don't see any technology in this movie.
Oh, no, they did clocks. A really great job.
You don't see clocks, you don't see TVs, you don't see anything. So I thought, there's no cell phones.
Yeah, they showed just enough to get you into their world and didn't show too much and spoil it, or didn't show too little and spoil it. I thought they did a fantastic job.
And so it really made the movie have a timeless appeal to it, because the movie doesn't seem dated at all.
Oh, no, it lives up just fine.
Yeah, I mean, there's because all of it just doesn't, none of it seems dated, and I was surprised at rewatching it. Because, it's an old movie. It's, it's 20 years old almost.
Well, the set design was nominated for an Academy Award. So, that makes total sense.
Understandably.
The production design was all... Because it was a fantastically... The environment they created was perfect.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
So it's a hit. I totally recommend it.
I give it A+.
Yeah, I don't think... I guess I'm not quite as worried about the future eugenics. Although, in little ways, I mean, as it says in the movie, I mean, we have the human genome mapped now. Doesn't mean we can do all these crazy things quite yet. But, little bits of this can already happen. And like Senator Rand Paul said, if you're allowed to just abort your babies, that could lead to all sorts of eugenics. Well, which is sort of crazy talk, because...
Well, except we have discrimination now on genetics. We just skirt the issue that it's genetics, because, insurance companies still do all kinds of things.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Yep. Oh, and that, you know, I mean,
they find ways to cloak it in other terminology so they don't get in trouble, but.
Yep. Yep. So the future is upon us. But, you know, it also, this is a movie that it would inspire me, if I had the liquid assets enough to, who am I kidding? Just the assets. If I had the assets to buy, several really expensive suits, this movie is a movie that sells that lifestyle.
Absolutely.
Cause, you know, that's, to go with your Herman Melville desks, whatever they're called.
Herman Miller
desks.
Herman Melville.
Well, whatever.
My Moby Dick chair.
Yeah, well, it's got one leg.
A 30-foot leg.
Yeah, well, I was thinking, you know, doesn't Captain Ahab only have one leg? The whale bit off his leg. I don't know. I haven't read the book.
Haven't read Moby Dick?
No, I'm not very well read. Drew and I talked about that. He and I both actually managed to avoid reading lots of classics.
Oh, that damn class in high school. I will never forgive my counselor ever.
Well, strangely enough, you know what class I took in high school for English that was, you know, sort of a, I mean, it wasn't like an AP class, but it was an alternative to just regular English class, was a science fiction class. Which I thought was going to be easy. Turns out science fiction is sometimes quite difficult.
Yeah.
But it brought me to the book. Have you read the book A Canticle for Leibowitz?
No.
If you like sci-fi, A Canticle for Leibowitz is pretty great.
I do like sci-fi.
Yeah.
Is it on Audible?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. You'll have to trust me. It takes some turns, but it's worth reading, and I wouldn't have read it unless I was forced to. Especially after the first turn in the book, and at this point in my life, I read voraciously, and if I started a book, I would pretty much always finish a book. I wouldn't. It was like a personal thing. You don't not finish a book. Now I'm a lot more fickle about that sort of thing. Life is too short to read a book that after 100 pages, I'm like, nah. I'm happy to put it down. But during that time, it's like, but this is the one where I thought going in, I'm like, oh my God, where is this going? Oh no. But then it's very interesting.
So are we done with Gattaca talk?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. I didn't want to start going really tangent until we were sure. So
no. Okay. So time for tangent talk. It's tangent time. Okay. Tangent time. It's tangent time. Tangent time.
You crack me up.
No, somebody's. Oh, yeah, you got that my daughter singing thing I said to you.
She's definitely her father's daughter.
It's awesome.
You are definitely half creator of that child. There is no doubt. She is your kid.
Maybe I'll include it here. It just makes me smile.
You'll spend my hair right, right, right. When you go down, dingly, dingly, right, right. Scooby da 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 da.
Yeah. Well, you should. It'll be good when she's 16 as well, by the way.
Yeah, well.
Like, I will release this to your entire graduating class if you don't stop. I will tweet it to all of them or whatever the 2025 or whatever it is it happens to be, but equivalent happens to be. But okay, I've added A Canticle for Leibowitz to my wish list.
Excellent.
On Audible, and I got a notice last week from Audible that they had a wish list buy one get one.
Okay.
So they were like, here's all these things that we know are on your wish list that are on this buy one get one thing. And so I thought, one credit, I can get two books. That's usually how I buy my books these days on Audible, is because I hate to spend, unless it's something I really, really, really want to listen to, I tend to be pretty frugal with my credits. And so I had some credits left over, and so I was scrolling through things, and I thought, okay, so I thought I need some funny. I need some funny in my life right now. So I got two things on my wish list, which were the newer Jim Gaffigan book, and the Rachel Dratch book.
Oh, excellent! I have the Jim Gaffigan book. I don't have Rachel Dratch, but I saw it on that sale.
So I put them in my cart, and I check out, and I have Rachel Dratch and Arnold Schwarzenegger, Total Recall.
Oh my God.
And I was like, no, there is no, there is no way I selected this. There is no way. And I see the receipt in my inbox and it shows I picked the Jim Gaffigan and Rachel Dratch. And so I am beside myself. I'm like, this is a bug. This is a horrible glitch. Somebody at Audible is playing a joke and trying to shove this horrible by the way, read by him and somebody else. I'm not listening to it. And I like Arnold Schwarzenegger as an actor, and I think he was not a terrible governor for California. The nanny banging aside, but I have no desire for the book. So I go online. I'm on my phone, I think, and I'm on the chat. I must have been on my laptop. So I'm on the Audible, which is Amazon, by the way. I'm on the Audible, help me chat window with Stacy Lee or Stacy Lynn or whoever happens to be helping me. And so I give Audible credit because they were like, no pun intended. They were like, oh, we're really sorry that happened to you. We've no idea what happened. So she goes, I'll tell you what, I'm going to take off the Arnold Schwarzenegger book. And I'm going to put the Jim Gaffigan book and I'm going to refund your credit.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I got
three books
for free.
Yeah, that's excellent.
And I got, an hour of angst over almost having Arnold Schwarzenegger in my library.
That's awesome. Well, good for Audible. I'm happy, even though Audible is part of Amazon and Amazon is trying to destroy publishing, sort of, depending on who you ask for it.
Well, but they're part of Amazon now. They weren't. They weren't up until a couple of years ago.
Yeah, well, they have me as a customer. I spend far too much money with them, but it's my...
With Audible or Amazon?
Oh, well, both, actually, but really with Audible. I am a
fiend. I don't buy anything. If it's not on my credits, which I granted, yes, I pay for, but I don't buy anything off of Audible.
Oh, no. Those deal of the day things.
Yeah.
I have spent more $2.95 charges on books that I may someday read on Deal of the Day because I don't have to dust them or look at them. It's easy to spend $3 on a book. And then all of a sudden I have that's why I have 1,000 books in my Audible account or whatever, because it's crazy. But all the fun stuff in there. I actually, it turns out the Hot Zone, because Ebola is in the news again. Richard Preston's Hot Zone, which I had read over and over and over again, or listened to, back on, when it was actually on cassette. Well, I had the abridged version on cassette because the other version wasn't available, at least to me at the time. So I went and I used a credit, or maybe I didn't. Maybe it was because it was only like $14 or something, so it was $10. It was almost, it was either just slightly below or just, I guess it's just slightly above what a credit actually costs. And I'm frugal enough not to do that. I mean, I'll be pound-wise enough to spend $10 on a book when I can spend a credit on a $30 or $40 book.
Right.
But anyway, so the unabridged version of The Hot Zone, just as good. Loving it. Listen to it. Because I had read it before. It's one of the things I don't mind listening to when I go to sleep. Because if I sleep through part of it, it doesn't really matter. It's a fantastic story. Have you read that book?
No.
Oh, I highly recommend The Hot Zone. It's a true story. It's about Ebola and Marburg and Hantavirus and a bunch of other stuff. And it's told in a really neat way. The movie Outbreak is kind of sort of based on a lot of the ideas from The Hot Zone. He wrote another book, Richard Preston did, called Demon in the Freezer, about smallpox.
I vaguely, that sounds familiar.
That is a chilling book. Because smallpox was kind of supposed to be eradicated. But you know who has smallpox? We do, in laboratories. And the former Soviet Union, in crazy, who knows how secure they are, facilities. And if smallpox comes out, I remember a couple years ago it was a big deal where weaponizing smallpox would be a bad thing for humanity.
Well, because manufacturing enough smallpox vaccine becomes problematic.
Very. And you have to do the whole ring vaccinations, so you have to have a lot of it. And nobody is in the practice of doing it anymore. And people are anti-vaccination in some crazy parts of the world. In the United States.
Working in public health, and I'm intimately aware with the protocols. So.
Yeah, so it's yeah, it's interesting. So I would recommend those two books. I do not recommend another book I bought from him. It's called, it's kind of like a memoir of his time where he worked at, or he didn't work, but he was at the CDC doing research for the hot zone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called like Panic in Level 4 or something, because these are Level 4 viruses or pathogens. And that's not nearly as good as just reading The Hot Zone. Just read The Hot Zone. Nobody cares about what the author did. This is not a Capote situation. Anywho. So anything else on your list today?
I'm listening to a new book on Audible, which is, I don't know which came first, the book or the video game, or the video game or the book, but it, I think it's a video game. I'm pretty sure it's a video game I own, actually, Metro 2033.
Oh, yeah, is the book Metro 2033 also?
I'm listening to it on Audible.
Who's by? Is it a Russian author?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. Let me know how it is.
It's really good. I'm having problems with there's so many place names that are Russian that I can't keep track of all the Russian names. So it's hard for me sometimes. I'm losing some of the characters and some of the.
Well, isn't Russian literature famous for characters having more than one name? Like they have family names and then nicknames up the yin yang. So you have to read Dostoevsky with a notebook and a concordance with you.
Well, and this book, the protagonist is Artyom, and so I'm pretty sure that has to have been a video game, right? Video game.
Oh, no, it was definitely a video game. I think it's still like a $50 video game.
Oh, no, I paid like $5 on it for Steam.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't buy expensive video games because I'm a gamer, but I'm a casual gamer. I love to game, but I will not spend I will not spend more than $20, $30 in a game.
Oh, speaking of which, let me tangent off slightly. Guess what I got for like, I think it was less than $10, and it was actually a DVD. The Fallout 1, 2, and then Tactics, although I don't think Tactics will work anymore. But Fallout 1 and 2, the original games, have you ever played those?
Yeah.
I love those games.
And they're great games. I have them for my old Mac.
Yeah, I played it first on the Mac a long, long time ago. And, you know, playing like New Vegas or Fallout 3, I think Fallout 3 still is my favorite video game ever. But all that richness that you can now realize in a, you know, a video game on the Xbox or one of the big consoles now, still all of the storytelling was already there in the first Fallout game.
And it was very much an RPG, you know, it was very much an RPG type game.
Oh, most definitely. And it was big on character modification and creation, but also lots of storylines and lots like an overarching storyline, but also lots of little side quests and things. Fantastic. Fun to play, like to replay now. It's great.
Yeah. Well, I also realized in playing Fallout, you quickly realize that your decisions quickly prevent you from completing things. If you don't do things correctly, you lose.
Oh, yeah. And if you, like, I've been dumb, because now I'm just kind of having fun, but, like, character creation, like, I've just made a character that has a ton of luck, and that opens up a bunch of possibilities. That, you know, because luck isn't really something that, you know, if you could play the game without a bunch of luck, it would not a problem. But with the feature of having a really high luck score, it opens up things that you couldn't get otherwise, or at least you couldn't get easier otherwise. So,
right.
We'll see. It's been fun. But of course, do I lose myself for an hour or two in a video game, or do I work on editing podcasts? I gotta be careful.
Well, and I'm bad because of all the things, you know, I don't. I used to game a lot more than I do, but now my time has been busy with this, you know, this DVD project that I was working on, which I'm going to end up working on again, and some other things have been going on. You know, I have like Tuesday night's my podcast night, so everybody knows like Tuesday night I am committed. I don't make plans for Tuesday night. Wednesday night's my gaming night, so I have some friends that I play online games with. And so Wednesday night I play, but we kind of play whatever we can play together. So all the games that I have that I would normally play solo, like on the weekends, like Batman, Arkham Origins and all that, that I haven't finished yet, are just kind of sitting around because I've got other stuff. And of course now I've got sucked into the most horrible of horrible multiplayer game. So.
Which is?
Minecraft.
Oh, I've heard strange things about that.
It's fun, but I have to be careful because I spent 14 hours in Minecraft on Saturday.
Yeah, that's a problem.
So I was like, no. So now my rule is I will not play Minecraft except with my one friend who play Minecraft with me. Because I will easily just, it would, like, I didn't get anything done Saturday. I needed to get done because I was playing this game. And then I realized, you know, this is like 15-year-old behavior, so not so much. I have real-world responsibilities.
Well, that's, and now with a child, there's no way. Because, you know, I mean, back before children, I could play a game like Fallout 3 or Fallout New Vegas or whatever, where you'd play it for hours and hours and hours, and then you'd go to bed and you'd like wake up thinking about solutions to the problems in the video game. And I can't spend that kind of time anymore. But it's all time management. But I am able to carve out Tuesdays. My wife and child are very generous about that. And I really appreciate you and Drew also carving out time for Tuesdays, because this has been great. I'm been a big fan of this podcast existing.
No, happy to do it. It's fun and I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And even if you and I are the only ones who enjoy it, too bad.
Exactly. Like I said, we're not going to ever get thousands of people listening. But you know what? If anybody enjoys it, let us know. And if you don't enjoy it, let us know. And if you never hear about it, we're never going to know, so it's fine.
Yeah, it's a true story. Yeah.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.